presented to the committee, we want to expect, we need to get some data from you now, or you're waiting for some more instructions from us before you can give us more data. I will need some help to answer that question from my team. So if someone from my team is here that can answer this, Gert, you're welcome.
Hi.
Thank you. Thank you, Heather and Fadi and Suzanne. Their response to the letter is not required at this time, and ICANN does plan to post a revision to the procedure for taking exception to WHOA's requirements based on national law, revised to accommodate data retention also, and posting the agreement. And that posting of that procedure is not a prerequisite to posting the agreement. I think having an agreement in place is a prerequisite to finally approving the RAA, but that'll, you know, the posted RAA will go through a period of public comment. In the meantime, we will post the revision to the procedure, have public comment, and take what steps are needed to get it approved.
United States?
Thank you for that. So then my understanding would be that there will be two documents posted for public comment, and we will need to comment on both of them.
Yes.
But the original letter we should put to one side.
That's correct.
Shred it. Okay.
Don't shred it. It's nice.
Thank you.
Thank you. Krista Spain.
Thank you. I wonder if, given that you've started to talk about, in a slightly different context, but you've started to talk about privacy issues and WHOIS, I wonder if I could raise an area where perhaps you the GAC, might be able to help us. You won't be surprised to hear that the letter that was received from the DPA and the European Union suggesting that the current situation is or intentions are outside of the laws has caused some consternation with various other constituencies, and I'm wondering if there's any help that we can get to clarify the position of that letter, because I understand that the Article 29 Working Party is an independent authority. And that therefore we need to get to clarify that the opinion expressed by them in its letter won't have any legal repercussions in the European Union. I wonder if there's any help you can give us on that.
EU Commission.
Thank you very much, Chair. Well, just to put everyone at ease, actually this is a formal advisory group. And concerning EU data protection, and it's called Article 29 based on a directive that is steering this, and they're there to give advice, and they themselves and we as well are very clear on the fact that they are independent of the European Commission. So that gives you an idea that this is not a EU position as such, but a position of the advisory committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you for that clarification. Okay, so next we have some questions coming from Australia regarding due diligence.
Thank you, Chair. I'll try to be very brief. It's really seeking a clarification. As I've mentioned in previous meetings there, and as many know, I guess, there are two parts to the law enforcement recommendations, one which deal with amendments to the RAA, and a second part which deal with due diligence activities recommendations for ICANN. I understand there's been progress in a number of those areas, and it appears that the board's response to the Prague communique seems to indicate that there's progress in another area. It mentions some auditing and so on. So, but I'm just not clear whether ICANN feels it has fully implemented those recommendations. There's four of them, and I know there's been progress in some areas. There appears to be progress in others, but I'm simply not sure. So some clarification at some stage as to whether ICANN considers there is still anything outstanding in that area or anything that it's not going to do for some reason just would be very useful.
Kurt, would you like to respond?
So we have made very good progress with the law enforcement community in a number of meetings we had, and Kurt will comment on these. We have finished the discussions with them and with the community, and we're now incorporating the output of that into the new version of the agreement. I'm not sure if Kurt wants to comment on some of the details of where we are with that, or we should wait till this is posted in a couple of weeks here, in a couple of months, but I'll let him comment on that. He may have more details on this.
Australia?
Thank you. But just to clarify, it's a separate issue, as I understand it, from the RAA process. So there's a number of recommendations about amendments to the RAA, and then some separate things which ICANN can do administratively, effectively. So it's a question about those ones in particular.
Bruce Tonkin.
Thank you. It's Bruce Tonkin speaking. I think what Australia is referring to there is that there are... there's a registrar accreditation agreement, which is currently being negotiated, which is the agreement with an accredited registrar. I believe Australia is referring to the process that happens before that, effectively before a registrar is accredited, and that there's a series of due diligence requirements that staff use before accrediting a registrar. And I think a question from Australia is, have those law enforcement recommendations being taken into account in ICANN's accreditation process? I believe that's the question, and if we don't have an immediate answer, perhaps we just agree to get an answer back later if someone's not available to respond.
I think we're going to have to provide an answer later. This is Kurt Pritz. We have recently upgraded the accreditation process to include background checks, for example, as part of the accreditation. So within the past year, that's been included. But as far as including the remainder of the law enforcement recommendations, as far as the law enforcement recommendations as part of the accreditation, we'll respond more fully later.
Thank you. Okay, so next, Egypt, as one of the co-chairs of the board GAC Recommendation Implementation Working Group, you wanted to raise a point with the board today?
Thank you, Chair. And very briefly, just to bring to the board's attention two suggestions that were made during the BGRI Working Group meeting on Sunday. And those has to do with the procedure by which the GAC and the board will try to find a mutually acceptable solution in case of disagreement. The two suggestions were to set a maximum duration for board GAC consultations that is required as per the ICANN bylaws, and an initial suggestion was 6 months. The other thing is that should the board decide to not to follow a GAC advice, that this be supported by two-thirds of the board members. The two suggestions were already brought to the attention of the board members who are already members of the joint working group. And, of course, they need... we were told that they need a board decision and might also imply changes in the bylaws, but we thought it's worth bringing to the whole board's attention. Thank you.
Bill Graham.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Egypt, for reminding us all of those points. You can be assured that I've taken careful note of them. The board has not had an opportunity to meet since Sunday, but I will introduce both these items for consideration at the earliest possible time. Thank you.
Thank you both.
I can't say anything committal beyond what Bill has said, because as he's said, we haven't had a chance to meet and consider all of this. And also, as you quite properly noted, if we cast these as formal rules, we'll have to make a bylaw change, which is a certain amount of work and time. All that said, my view of those two aspects, setting a time deadline and having a supermajority of the board in case there is have a certain common sense to them. In the first case, to make sure that the process is not endless and that it has time bound. And the second one is, from a purely political point of view, irrespective of what the threshold is, whether it's a majority as it is today or whether it's set higher, the board takes extremely seriously GAC advice. And whether I am chair or just sitting on the back bench, I would argue that if we're inclined to take a position not to follow GAC advice, we had better have quite a bit of solidity in our decision, else we are buying ourselves even more trouble than we know we're already buying ourselves. So whether it's formal or whether it's informal, I would expect that this board and future boards, if they're going to go uphill and take on the task of an adverse decision with respect to GAC advice, we'd better be well organized and quite strongly aligned to do that. But that's just an informal opinion.
Thank you, Steve. Okay, so in relation to the new GTLD program underway, for your information, to give you a sense of some of the discussions we've had so far, GAC members do have concerns about some particular categories or kinds of applications, and we're wanting to think about how to treat them as part of the early warning and GAC advice, and also the actions that ICANN can take in relation to those. Some questions we had was how, in fact, applicants will be held to the commitments that they undertake to do certain things with their top-level domains, and how applicants may be constrained via contracts and so on if an accommodation is reached, for example, between an applicant and a government or governments about a potential concern or concern that's been raised via the GAC member or the GAC later on in the process. So these are the things that we're pondering, and whether you have initial thoughts or suggestions in relation to those concerns, now would be the time. Thank you.
I'd rather if Kurt responded to this in particular.
Heather. With regard to incorporating restrictions into agreements and enforcing them, the guidebook is written so that if an applicant registers themselves as a community applicant and identifies the restrictions associated with representing that community, those restrictions will be included into the agreement. And then ICANN will hold the applicant to that. With regard to agreements with governments, the guidebook does not describe that or take that into account. And I would recommend that as the governments or as the GAC, I don't know what's appropriate, so I apologize, register those concerns with us and have discussions with applicants about restrictions around their registry that, using those real cases that the GAC and ICANN can discuss at that time how those restrictions might be included into an agreement.
Let me also ask Bertrand.
Yeah, Bertrand Lachapelle. I take the opportunity of this question to actually ask the GAC in return to see whether you have considered a type of situation whereby, for instance, a government gives a letter of support to a particular application in the course of the process, and for whatever reason at the national level, like a change of government or a change of the local authority or so, the new authorities considers that this application or this TLD, which has been in operation for a couple of years, for instance, is actually not the one that this authority would like to continue to support. We would be then in a situation for a GTLD that would amount to the equivalent of a redelegation for the CCs without the framework for redelegation of the CCs. So I just want to interject this question as a sort of symmetrical question on whether the GAC has considered this and whether you would be able to provide some kind of feedback at a later stage on such a situation, because this impacts the stability and the predictability for the operators of GTLDs regarding the agreements that they have received when they made an application.
Thank you, Bertrand. I have Australia and Chris Disvain, please.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks very much to Kurt for the answer to the question. I just want to hone in a little bit more specifically, if that's possible. So I'm very encouraged to hear that. So I guess it's the answers in response to question 20 in the community applications, so that there will be they will turn up in contracts and be enforced. I think we're equally interested in the question 18, which is, I believe, for all applicants and covers issues such as the mission and purpose, but more particularly the measures, the operating rules to minimise social costs. And I've heard some mixed answers as to whether the commitments that applicants or the promises, whatever we call them, that applicants are making in that question, whether they will be in the contracts with ICANN and enforced, subject to enforcement. And the reason we ask is this question is one of the key questions for GAC members assessing GTLD applications to see if there are any issues of concern, essentially. I can speak for Australia in that in many cases none of the strings, or not many of the strings, look particularly worrying in and of themselves. It's how they will essentially be run where our concerns will lie. So I'd appreciate knowing whether those commitments that applicants have made in question 18 will be in contracts and subject to enforcement by ICANN.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for the question. The way the guidebook was configured was, like you said, to incorporate the community restrictions and create restrictions there. There was a balance, and those social costs questions were really about to get applicants concerned about those issues. When there was a balancing of how to incorporate such restrictions and also allow for changing business models over time. So the way the current model is configured, only the community-based restrictions are required. But like I said earlier, once we actually start hearing the GAC early warnings and GAC concerns about specific examples, I think in real time we can engage with the applicants to consider incorporating additional restrictions into the agreement. It was hard to do, just as a final explanation, it was hard to do a priori with a blank question, knowing whether or not we'd be able to incorporate those restrictions in the agreement that were the answers to question 18.
Thank you, Kurt. I have Chris Disvain and then Australia for a follow-up.
Thank you. I think we need to break this down into two distinct areas. Yeah. First of all, in respect to question 18, those are statements that you make in your application, and there is a clause that says that you will warrant in the registry contract, you warrant that everything that you've said in your application is true. And we'll continue. So on that specific area, I actually think, and I've got my lawyer's hat firmly screwed onto my head right now, I actually think that ICANN would be it would be able to rely on the warranty. And I'm not, I've stressed here, I'm not giving legal advice. Rely on the warranty in the registry license agreement. In respect to circumstances where you, and I'm going to take an example, you object, you have put an early warning up on a particular string, And the purpose of the early warning was to allow people to come to you and say, well, explain to us what your problem is and we'll see if we can assist you. So if you then reach terms with the applicant that mean that you are comfortable and you withdraw your early warning and you decide not to object, what you're asking is how do we ensure that what you've agreed with the applicant is actually adheres to. And it's in that area where I think work is required. So I don't have an answer, but I wanted to make sure that we were very clear what we were talking about. That's the area where the work is required. Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Chris. All right, Australia, for a follow-up, please.
Look, thanks very much, Chris. But not the whole problem. So to explain, and again, I won't pick a particular example, but string X is in a sensitive sector, a regulated sector in a country, in many countries or all countries, and in its response to how it will minimise social harm or the mission and purpose, so that its answers in question 18 assures that it will do upfront vetting, limited registration policies, a whole bunch of things which sound extremely good, governments may choose not to issue an early warning. And what happens if they don't live up to those commitments? So there's a warrant, but it won't turn up in a contract. I'd be really keen to know what's going to happen.
So let me see if this... I may not, but let's try. It says all material information provided and statements made in the registry TLD application and statements made in writing during the negotiation of this agreement were true and correct in all material respects at the time made. And such information or statements continue to be true and correct in all material respects as of the effective date, except as otherwise previously disclosed in writing by the registry operator to ICANN. So that is that in part, that's a warranty in respect to the statements made. Now, the legitimate question for you that I think you are asking, and I agree with you, is yes, and then what happens if they don't carry that out? So that's we need to answer that question.
If I can just add, I have a few requests to speak. But part of the question is what happens, what is the process when there is a change or a material change later on as well, correct? So if we could receive an answer about that as well. So there's how to warrant the contents of the agreement, but then if you're expecting that things can change over time, and we've noted that they can with the existing top-level domains, then what's the process for that? Okay, so I have UK, Spain, and Germany, please.
Yes, thanks very much, Chair. This I support very much what Australia is positing here, which is reflecting what a lot of our regulators are saying. They're saying that on the face of it, some of these proposals seem to have due regard for the public interest, for the consumer interest, for these these registries which are going to be targeting areas of activity which are regulated. And they're regulated because there are inherent risks, extensive risks, and there is extreme nervousness, certainly in the UK, and I know it's shared by other administrations too, about certain sectors, healthcare, financial, charities, just to name three. Those are actually the three really very obvious ones. So what we're looking for is assurances that ICANN will follow through and ensure that there is good governance in those registries, that they do adhere to what they say they will commit to do in terms of respecting consumer interest, the status of the professions that they are engaging with, the authority and consent of certain activities, be they charities, banks, health providers, and so on. So that's what we're sort of reflecting here. And we will discuss this further in the GAC, of course, but we wanted to flag this up now. And You know, we've all been relying on the answers to question 18, but that's just the start of the story. And while I'm at the mic, just come back to Bertrand's point. We haven't had a discussion of that with regard to government authorised geographical GTLDs, which you posit a scenario where there may be some change in the situation. We'll give that some further thought. I just want to make the point, which I know Kurt is aware of from an exchange earlier in the week, that the UK would like to see those government authorised GTLDs be considered alongside the IDNs in that first phase of evaluation. That's the UK position, and I know it's shared by other administrations. Thank you.
Thank you, UK. So, Fadi, would you like to respond to those first points?
Yeah, simply to say that these are important questions and they can't be answered on the fly like this. I took note of it, and we owe you an answer, certainly on the question of enforcement and the assurances that the UK was seeking. So we took note of that. And as to the request for prioritizing geographical GTLDs or TLDs, we also have noted that, and we will respond to that as well.
Thank you. I need to be clear that that's something under discussion in the GAC, so that's a proposal from the UK. It isn't yet a GAC view, but it's in relation to our interest in certain categories and thinking about what are the related issues to those categories.
Yeah, simply because we're receiving these requests also from outside the GAC, and in fact some of the GAC members also have made these requests directly to us as individual countries. So I'm aware of this need, and at least we'll wait for your full advice, but we will also respond in general, because there's a lot of requests for advancing certain types of TLDs ahead of others. So we will respond comprehensively to this.
Thank you. Okay, so I have Spain and Germany, and then let's move to the next agenda item. Spain, please.
Thank you very much for this opportunity to talk. I would like to touch upon some of the general issues that arise from the new GTLD process, as well as to follow on some of the comments made by my colleagues from Australia and the UK. But I'd like to do it in Spanish, if you don't mind. So please, if you have your headphones ready, please put on them or not, read on the screen. Thank you.
The other day, we had a presentation on a proposal to establish a certain order for the allocation of the domains that have been requested. I hope that proposal is not closed, it's not completely closed, and I hope some changes can be admitted and that the possibility to introduce some modifications is admitted as well. I would put a note to this system, and it's a fact that it's very neutral, very objective, but I think it does not respect the principle of equality, in the sense that the principle of equality implies trying, or rather treating, the different applications in a different fashion, and I think this hasn't been really taken into account. With a specific treatment to the applications that have certain peculiarities implies not to apply a random criterion, but rather to consider public interest principles, and considering the aim of increasing the diversity, cultural diversity, geographical diversity, etc., on the internet. In this sense, I believe it is a good idea to have placed multilingual domains in the first place, even though there are some applications in this group which do not really come from multilingual countries, but actually they attempt to obtain domains that are already existing, but they want to have the translations in their respective languages. I think this is something that has to be reviewed. I support the position of the United Kingdom of giving priority to geographical domains that have also been supported by the respective governments, in the sense that they will serve to convey values, interests that are public. I would also add to that list the community domains that have been qualified as such by the communities and that have the support that is so required in the applicant guidebook of the representative organizations. And I would also like to point out that according to the numbers I have, community domains are 84, geographical domains are 66, and IDNs are 116, in comparison to the 1,930 domains that have been requested. I think putting them in the first place wouldn't really imply a hassle. But other ideas in this line of considering other interests that need to be considered when proposing this automatic system include, for example, why not giving priority to those applications that have only requested for one domain and have not requested 10 or 20 domains or 77 or 100 and something as some have required. I think that some who have applied for such a long number do actually have an interest of making use of that domain, aside from the financial profit that they can get. Another idea is to place in that first place those applications that are coming from organizations that are established, and I insist in these words, that are located, established, based in countries in Africa. The African applications are 17, and then they are followed by Latin America and the Caribbean. These are 24. Asia Pacific is 303, and I insist on this because these are not very large numbers to alter the system that has been designed, that it would be a gesture by ICANN to the rest of the world in the sense that ICANN is considering the public interest. I would also like to remind you that at least in my country, ICANN does not appear in the news. It has been in the news precisely because of this process of creating new domains, and I believe it's very important that ICANN take advantage of this process to improve its image in the world. Certainly, well, sometimes the image we have of ICANN is that this is a multi-stakeholder model, and this is very good, and I support that. We are applying this in our country, in our government policies, but in the end, it's the same companies that get a benefit from this. This is an organization that continues to look to itself. It seems you're only considering the registering companies, that companies that register domains. And when this process has an impact, a tremendous impact, a very huge consequences in companies that do not really administer anything, but actually, this depends on the internet. And so, following this line, I support the comments made by my Australian colleagues. We, the governments, are concerned by the consequences that these can have for entities that have not really looked for this process, but they will see that their rights are affected by these new GTLD programs. I'm sorry I have talked for so long, and thank you very much for paying attention to me. Thank you.
Thank you, Spain. Okay, I see a few more requests for the floor. To the points that relate to, I think, future rounds, these questions were discussed to some extent yesterday as part of the high-level meeting, and those messages will be communicated. I think what is most pressing for us this afternoon is are the tasks in front of the GAC presently, which relate to GAC early warning and GAC advice, setting timelines, ensuring that there is clarity around what mechanisms exist in relation to the applications and the commitments that are being made, and how any agreements that can be reached with applications around concerns can be accommodated in one instrument or one mechanism or another. So with that, I will move us to the next agenda item. I think we've raised our concerns, and is it to this point? Okay. All right. Germany, please, if you could be brief, and then we can move to the next. Thank you.
Thank you for allowing me also to speak. Sorry, and I will try to be very, very brief. I will come back to the questions we had from our colleague from Australia and our colleague from UK. And it is really in respect how safeguarding public policy interest in respect of the new GDLD process, and in particular in respect of some of the GLD in a regulated markets. And I would ask to what extent it is really necessary now to decide on specific requirements and really define them exactly, because normally I think we have in these markets we have a legal a framework in various jurisdictions, and that should be generally sufficient. But if there is some kind of misleading of a GDLD, then I think we have still some possibilities. And if I say me, it's the GAC on one side, but I think also ICANN has a possibility to intervene. And it would be interesting to what extent this is possible, and maybe we could have also some clarification in what cases this is possible, because probably it's not only one way where ICANN can intervene in this fact. Thank you.
Thank you, Germany. Okay, so with that, let's move to the next item, which relates to the process followed in relation to the IOC and Red Cross, and I'm looking to the United States to raise this with the board, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I won't be very long on this, so I hope I can help us make up for some lost time. We have taken note, obviously, of your September 13, I believe it is, your resolution, and are now we have an eye on the January 2013 date that you have established. We are also, of course, very mindful of a recently posted recommendation from the GNSO's drafting team on the IOC Red Cross issues. And we just wanted to flag something for you today because we don't have sufficient time to engage in a more detailed conversation. I think we would quite like to do so at a future meeting, and a lot will hinge, I believe, on what happens inside the GNSO with this recommendation and whether the GNSO does, in fact, determine to accept the recommendation to initiate a PDP, a policy development process. What we wanted to flag with you today is that we remain a little bit unclear, or a lot unclear. Let me just go right ahead and say we're unclear as to there we go. No ambiguity there. As to a case like this, a situation where the GAC has provided advice that is based, and in this case, it's kind of unique, I think, based very, very directly on national laws and international treaties, specifically the treaties that we negotiate, we sign, and we are signatories, and we are responsible for the provisions, for upholding the provisions of those treaties. So this particular piece of advice was premised completely on those two sort of categories. Maybe we are we take our responsibilities for our laws and interpreting them, and for interpreting our responsibilities under any international treaty very, very seriously. So when we offer advice that is premised on those two bases, we sort of feel like we are giving you the best you could possibly get. Obviously, that's a sovereign perspective on such things. So when we then find ourselves in a situation where that was apparently, let me put this the other way, it's a question. What was missing in the GAC advice that would lead the board and the GNSO to believe they need to develop policy? So it's not clear to us whether the policy would be focused on trying to interpret our laws and our treaty obligations, which we would find fairly troublesome, or whether the policy should actually be called implementation, because the advice, based on its legal premises, is accepted or considered acceptable. I think your outside counsel thought it was all right, based on the unredacted version of the staff paper. But maybe there are some implementation details to be worked out, and I think we would be more than happy to engage in that and to better understand that. What I think is leaving a huge question mark in our minds is, where is the policy requirement coming in, and how do we then interact with whatever that process is? So again, not to be debated today, but I think it has come up for those of you board members who are not members of the BGRI, and as Bill pointed out, you haven't had a chance to kind of review things. We have kind of floated that as a possible case study, because this, I think, raises a very important question for all of us. Thank you.
I'd like to offer a comment. I think there is some possible assumptions or misunderstandings and possibly some rough edges in our processes. If I understand the question you're asking, it contains the assumption that we have sent the advice that you're giving us, which is based upon policies and commitments that you made, that we're sending this over to the GNSO for a policy development process. And I think that's not what we've ever intended, even though it may have looked like that. And we need to untangle that. We do need, in all cases, no matter what we're talking about, to make sure that we know what it is that we are doing. We seek sometimes some clarification, some advice, some other inputs, implementation details, and not unimportant is also the socialization of these things, so that when we make a decision, it doesn't catch everybody else by surprise. But all of that falls well short of seeking a new policy development process for something that you've given us well-structured advice on. I suspect that we have not been crisp in our processes. I think it is extremely helpful to have this kind of dialogue and to iron out that language and lay out the sequence of steps and to make it clear that in our internal communications, as it were, we are not ignoring you or creating a new parallel process of some sort. Anybody else want to add to that? Shireen?
Not much, but Suzanne and I, we have correspondent on the IOC and Red Cross, and I think this will be a good case study, frankly, because we are always positively biased to accept GAC advice. We're also positively biased to do due diligence in certain cases, but you highlight here is that we've just given you pure advice based on international law and so on and so forth. What more do you want? And I think we need to really study this so that if there are mistakes or if there are things which are not working well, we eliminate them in the future. So let's use that as a case study and make sure we work on that.
But in all cases, I took note, and we owe you an answer of clarity as to what is going to happen with that. I also want to note that we will do the same for the comment from Germany earlier, that we will include in our answer to the Australia and UK input an answer to what you raised.
Okay, thank you. So I will make a brief point about IGOs, then we can move on to a question related to ethics and conflict of interest. In terms of IGOs, we just wanted to inform you that we are working on this issue, the issue of protections for IGOs, to ensure that we are giving a due priority and consideration to protections for IGOs in the GAC. And so you may see some comments coming from the committee as a result of that. So ethics and conflict of interest, Norway, do you want to comment, please?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to ask this. Just to remind about the GAC advice from the Prague meeting regarding to proceed urgently with all the necessary steps to implement an effective and enforceable ethics and conflict of interest policy. So we acknowledge the work done so far. We also acknowledge the response that we got in the letters. So, but of course we haven't had time to study this in detail. But basically what we're asking for is just a quick comment on the timelines for the different phases described in the response, if possible, and also just a confirmation of commitment from the board, I think, for to maintain and keep this as a high priority. Thank you.
Thank you, Norway. So Bruce Tongan will reply.
Yes, thank you. Firstly, let's confirm that it is a high priority and continues to be a high priority with the board. With respect to next steps, at the last meeting in Prague, we'd received input from an expert group, which was presented publicly in Prague. We committed to follow their advice. We have a document before us that we're planning to vote on Thursday this week in the board meeting, which picked up their recommendation, one, to collect all the different pieces of our conflicts and ethics and corporate governance guidelines into one document. That is now one document. It's about 11 pages with 28 sections. It has sections like a summary of our commitments with respect to the post-service limitation that had been of concern to the GAC and other members, as in what happens when a board member leaves the board. We have two paragraphs on that, just giving an example. But that picks up the advice that we'd received from that expert group as well. So you'll see that hopefully posted towards the end of this week, assuming the board approves it at this meeting. So we're progressing as planned.
Thank you for that, Bruce. Okay, so next we have the issue of route scalability and Sweden, please.
Thank you very much, Heather, for giving me the floor. And hello, everybody in the ICANN board. It's always a pleasure to have this kind of dialogue with you with this interesting and very important issues. Anyway, this route scalability issue is a favorite subject of mine, but I'm going to give it a little bit a different perspective, maybe. And thank you also so much for the answer to our Prague communique, which covers also this issue about the route scalability. And according to what you're saying, is that actually you're going to have a new process, actually, that will be defined to accommodate slowing down, halting, or reversing entries. So that's very reassuring, and you're also working together with the route system advisory committee, which is also very reassuring. And in parallel with that, we got a presentation from Kurt Pritz the other day about the introduction of the drawing prioritization is a document called, and according to what I understand there in the discussion we had, which I pointed out actually, is that it's more, instead of having a number, like we can have thousands a year and that works, and 1,000 plus one, then it suddenly doesn't work. that's not really the issue, which I also raised the other day. It's more like the pace and how you can actually adjust the pace. And what Kurt also pointed out, which is also covered in the document and also in the presentation, that are going to be changed with approximately 20 weeks or something like that. But even though there are figures and numbers in that process, I think the pace is the most important here. The last issue I want to raise is actually that you're talking about, according to what I understand, about technical evaluation and measurements. But I want to point out that I think it's equally important actually to see the administrative processes, whether they are kind of, you know, holding and being secure and working, because the service level for both the existing TLDs and the new TLDs, we don't want that to decrease or being worse. So that is the administrative process. It also needs to be measured. So this is information I think we probably need to come back with and have more dialogue while you're working with these measurements and how you proceed with together with the important stakeholders that you are dealing with in this issue. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sweden.
What is the question, actually? I agree with everything you said.
Good point. The question is... good boy. No, actually, the question is... Well, I didn't actually have any question. Of course, I had a question. I mean, the question is that are you taking into account also the administrative processes? Or because I can't really read that in either of these two documents. I mean, it's more like the technical issues, which I, of course, think is very important. I've been nagging about that for years now. But I just want to know whether you have that in mind as well. Thank you.
So you're asking if the administrative processes have been taken into account, and the answer is yes.
Thank you, Steve.
Bruce wants to expand.
Yeah, in fact, that's where we thought the only limitation was, actually, was administrative processes rather than the technical side. So that's actually been the focus all along. One thing I'll point out that the IANA does actually publish its statistics, at least on the IANA side, in terms of processing. So that's actually live. You can actually go to the ICANN website and see that. I imagine if there's any change to, you know, queue lengths, for example, like how long it takes to respond to a request from either a CCTLD or GTLD, you'll actually see that appearing in those public statistics. So that monitoring is there today and available.
Fani?
Yeah, just to clarify, Maria, I think the two things you said are very important. The first is how are we going to carefully manage the flow? And in the process we published, which Kurt went over, there are going to be three gates where we manage the flow. We're always going to use the draw number to pass through these gates, but these gates allow us to gauge as the applications are going through and avoid a situation where, frankly, we compromise the stability of the system just to rush things through. So there's going to be, frankly, three places where even if people sped through a part of the process, we're going to kind of tone it down to make sure that we do not compromise the stability of the system. I think on the administrative process, yes, as Steve confirmed, we, as part of the evaluation of these applications, we go quite a bit through that. And I want to add, even though you may not have asked this, that also the internal administrative processes of ICANN to actually deal with this growth in the number of registries are equally important. And this is an area where we are putting a lot of effort right now. So we ensure that the service level we offer to the registries and registrars in this much growing and going to be much larger space are of the right service level and quality so that we're never the issue in the delivery of these services.
Thank you. So we have a few minutes remaining for one last comment from Russia in relation to the issue of blocking. So Russia, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Following the useful meeting with SAC, I would like to stress on the topic of content blocking. And I'll be brief, but then in Russian, please use your headphones.
Satish Sachabharadvani. In the ISOC presentation, there was an analysis of DNS blocking. It became even more clear that the methods are either ineffective, inefficient, or they impact DNSSEC, for example, or alternatively, they segment the net. It's clear that probably issues having to do with unwelcome content, it is probably better to solve them at the service level. However, the main conclusion is probably that we would need to come up and develop recommendations on the methods for filtering and blocking content. There might also be an issue of globalizing a content and tying it and aligning it with local legislation. The main motivation here is obviously ensuring stability and integrity of the internet. Thank you.
Thank you, Russia. I did see a request from Brazil. Did you want to make the final comment today?
Well, thank you. Thank you, Heather. I will be very brief, knowing that this will be the final comment. And I would like to say that we, in the Brazilian perspective, we are seeing a very special time, a very special period in ICANN. Mr. Fadi, we certainly heard with great interest your words yesterday, and especially when you enlist among the priorities of ICANN two issues, that internationalization and the evolution of the multi-stakeholder model. Brazil is certainly ready to work within GAC with our colleagues of GAC to ensure that GAC can help you and the organization to meet these objectives. In this sense, since I have to be very brief, I would like to say that ICANN has a very unique opportunity to show that it can serve the public interest, like has been mentioned here before. I think this new GTLD process, in spite of all the questions that it arises, as would be natural in such a complex process, I think this is an opportunity for ICANN to serve the public interest. And here I would mention two specific measures that could be going tandem, that could address this opportunity to serve the global public interest, as has already been mentioned. I mean, if the GTLD is sponsored or supported by government, could sort of be prioritized, and at the same time, if we could achieve a more global balance of the assignations, since we know that we have lesser requests from countries from Africa, from Latin America, and from the Pacific. So probably we could achieve balance if we could have these regions sort of also being prioritized in within this process. These are my words. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Brazil, for those eloquent words. Okay, so with that, I think we can come to a conclusion in our session with the board. Thank you, Fadi. I think this is the first meeting formally in your new role with the GAG, so I hope it's the first of many successful and constructive exchanges that we have with you and Steve as chair and the rest of the board. So thank you again, and we'll see you. Yes, bye.
Let me add my thanks on behalf of the board. Thank you, Heather, and thank everyone on the GAC. We take these seriously, and we enjoy the quite frank and direct discussions, and so thank you.